Welcome to Convos from the Couch by LifeStance Health, where leading mental health professionals help guide you on your journey to a healthier, more fulfilling life. Hello, everyone. I'm Nicolette Lianza, and on this episode, I'm joined by therapist Karen Gilmore, and she'll help us to understand how fibromyalgia can affect mental health. So welcome, Karen. Great to have you on.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
According to the CDC, adults with fibromyalgia are three times more likely to have major depression, as well as higher death rates from suicide and injuries. So this is a really important conversation we're having today, Karen, as we talk about the various ways and how fibromyalgia can affect mental health. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your specialty in chronic pain.
Sure. So personally, I'm a mom of four adult children. I have two grandchildren. I live in the Midwest, and I'm an LCSW, licensed clinical social worker. I see clients here at LifeStance Health. But the important piece for this talk today, I worked in a rheumatology medical office, seeing patients who had diagnosis of fibromyalgia and a lot of patients who had chronic pain and fatigue. And then also, because of just my interest in general in the mental health field, I pursued additional training in trauma. And then once I was in the medical office, I pursued training in treating patients with chronic pain.
So you definitely come to this conversation with a lot of good experience to share. Definitely appreciate that. So what is fibromyalgia and what are some of its most common physical symptoms?
Okay, so fibromyalgia is defined as a chronic disorder characterized by widespread pain and other symptoms such as fatigue, muscle stiffness, insomnia, and just basically think of it as a stress illness. Anything stressful, which includes changes of any kind, a lot of us don't like change, and change happens all around us all day long. Anything that is stressful can cause a flare-up. And the right recipe of a big enough stressor will bring the onset of fibromyalgia, which is highly tied to our central nervous system. There could be something like a trauma or difficult medical situation, a car accident. All of those things can contribute to the onset of fibromyalgia. And the jury's still out. They're still doing a lot of research on, does it lie dormant in our system? Is there a family connection where genetically we have fibromyalgia in our system and the right recipe of that stress that creates the first symptom? So they still don't know that. They're still exploring that. So I'm glad we're exploring.
Yeah. Still research being done, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So some of the physical symptoms that somebody might be experiencing are the muscle tenderness or paininess, pain in the abdomen, the back, the neck, gastrointestinal problems, such as constipation, gas, nausea. And the gastroenterologist knows that those are some signs of fibromyalgia. And we go to them and we get offended when they say, I think you might need to see a therapist because we're not seeing anything specific related to this. So it is very difficult, especially within the medical community, of trying to get that answer, get that help. We could experience fatigue, being tired all the time. And even though you're tired, you might have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. And that's part of the frustration of it. You could have sensations of cold or tingling in the hands. You could have headaches, pins and needles, or sensitivity to pain, painful menstruation.
So many physical symptoms. Wow.
Yeah. And so another thing I want to bring into this conversation is I, too, have a history of chronic pain, the brain fog, the fatigue. It affected me for years, and I ended up going to doctors, trying to get some answers, and it definitely affected my sleep. So I was tired a lot, and I would go in, and I would have those discussions with the doctors, and then they would look at me puzzled. They say, you don't complain enough. I don't think you have it. I had multiple doctors tell me
that. Wow.
Yeah, and so I guess I didn't fall apart enough in front of them. So if we are competent in how we approach it, And so having the right tools of how to express what we're experiencing, I'll talk about that in a second. But I have three siblings with the diagnosis of fibromyalgia.
Oh, wow.
The ability that because of the way that our mind was, that we think she probably had fibromyalgia that was not diagnosed. There is a family component.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Potentially. Okay. Yeah. Wow. So how can fibromyalgia affect mental health? And what are some of the symptoms of it then?
Sure. So fibromyalgia right out the gate is going to affect our mood. We're going to have a difficult time. Anxiety and depression is definitely going to be present. It's going to be present anytime we have chronic pain. Mm-hmm. We could have mood swings, nervousness, stress, anger. Irritability is a big one. It shows up. When something's off, we're going to be irritable.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lack of concentration. There's the ever famous brain fog, which makes it very difficult to function and remember things. That's why a lot of folks have problems on the job. So depending on what job you have, if there's a lot of physical components that are stressing your body, you can end up with brain fog. And if there's a lot of stressful things where you got to get this done, got to get that done, you're going to end up with a lot of physical symptoms. Very much a brain and body connection illness. There could also be difficulty planning and managing things. Think about a busy family and how hard that is. You're going to be in constant flare-ups.
Right.
Difficulty with sustaining attention and focus. You could have indecisiveness. And all of these things can be very anxiety-inducing. And someone who experiences chronic pain, they're going to bump up against that anxiety and depression. Once again, that's key to remember. It's going to be present.
Got you.
Another thing that affects folks is the isolation. And also, I'm going to save that till later. Sorry about that. But isolation.
Got you. Sounds like you'll be talking a little bit more. We'll circle back to that. How can therapists help people with fibromyalgia to manage their mental health?
Okay. So keep in mind that psychoeducation is very important because we don't know what we don't know. And it's very difficult to manage something that the medical community even struggles to define. We know we're experiencing symptoms. And so they're under stress anyway. And so helping them understand the brain and body connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing I found out in working with everyone is I started to explore if they're a natural caregiver. And 99.9% of the folks I worked with. Yeah.
Wow. So
early on, I started noticing a pattern as I met with those hundreds of patients in rheumatology. And I saw that they have a tendency to give care and love to others, even worrying about others, but they set aside their own needs. Sometimes because core beliefs like that's not selfish, my needs don't matter, et cetera. So exploring the core beliefs about what it means to focus on their own care. Because we have that conversation with our clients all the time. And we say, tell me about self-care. And then it's too limiting.
Right.
So explore with them. Are you a natural caregiver? What does that look like? And then I'm going to talk a little bit more during this. You'll get a better idea of how to begin to shift that with your clients. When you're helping them see that caregiving is important, but 100% of our care means. So I do a lot of work with core beliefs because they do drive our behaviors. A natural caregiver more than likely was influenced to care when they were very young, but they were not taught the boundaries around it. Yeah. So that brings me to my next point of boundaries. Boundaries aren't just for relationships. They're for energy too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to help clients understand how to notice the boundaries around the energy and to really start putting them into place. And so once they learn how to put boundaries around their energy, and 90% of it is awareness. So I ask them, what are you noticing about the things that drain your energy and the things that boost your energy as you go through your day? And I have them report that.
Yeah.
And have them do that periodically or consecutively for 4 or 5 times, just so you understand where they're coming from, that they've got a good handle on that. And then they take off with it. And it does expand into boundaries in other areas of their lives. But it didn't even cross their mind to put boundaries around their energy because they have beliefs driving against that. And so that if we make note of the information and tell them, make note of this because this is gold. This is going to help you put boundaries around your energy, what you're noticing. And sometimes I'll have them write it down. What are you noticing about the energy drains and energy boosts? And then I tell them too, we can't work on what we don't know this. And that really connects with them. And I said, we weren't naturally born to have that awareness. And so I also teach them the butterfly hug. A lot of folks are aware of that.
Tell us a little bit more. What is that?
Okay. So the butterfly hug is, it comes out of EMDR therapy, which is a trauma therapy that I'm trained in. And there's all kinds of videos on YouTube. You can find it. But what they don't teach you is the science lesson. And so the nerves are connected from the right side of our brain down left side of the body, left side of the brain, right side of the body. So touching our body is going to get the brain's attention if the nerves are connected to that part of the body. Mm-hmm. So the butterfly hug is basically crossing your arms on your chest with your fingertips on your shoulders. And then you slowly alternate tapping. And what you're doing is you are grabbing the attention of your brain. And so when we are in hyper arousal, which is fight or flight, mm-hmm. we're going to be blocked from parts of our brain.
Right.
And in hypo arousal, the freeze, the same thing. There are parts of our brain that are going to be struggling. And so when we do the it's called bilateral stimulation, bi meaning two halves of the brain, lateral back and forth in stimulation. You're creating brain change because we're mm-hmm. basically opening up those neural pathways and giving ourselves access to the things that have been blocked or shut down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we need anxiety to get us out of the way of danger, but we don't need it to stay there all the time. Mm-hmm. And also the other thing that the butterfly hug will do, it stops the chemical dump of the adrenaline, the cortisol that our brain is programmed to dump when we're in fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but that's uncomfortable. So I want to that I want to regulate and the autonomic nervous system. I'll talk about that a little bit more, but that's what the butterfly hug is designed to do, to regulate the autonomic nervous system. And then there's another strategy that I really like. It's using the butterfly hug, but teaching clients about pendulation and what that is. So imagine just a pendulum going back and forth. And with chronic pain, we develop some really strong core beliefs, and they're very limited. Our brain can get rigid about our thinking with chronic pain. And so teaching them how to do the pendulation is basically like this. While they're using the butterfly hug, have them hold their inner gaze on the most discomfort in their body for a few minutes, then shift their awareness to the least discomfort in their body. And I have them pick whatever spot that is. Sometimes I have them let me know so I know where they're going back and forth. And they usually have a hard time finding a spot that's the least discomfort. So I'll suggest maybe the tip of the nose, an earlobe, something that is minor. And that seems to work for them. And then I have them slowly pendulate back and forth while I lead them between these two body parts. And so I'll have them pause on each one for 2 to 3 minutes. It depends on their tolerance level. I watch them, see how they're doing. Some of them are a little antsy and don't like to stay there because it can be uncomfortable to them to the inner gaze. And then once they've done that back and forth a few times and I feel like they have a good handle on it, I give them free rein to go at their own pace for several minutes so that I know that when they walk out, they've got a good handle on how to do that. And it is amazing because what happens is they will report that the discomforting part of their body feels more comfortable.
Yeah.
They'll feel less pain. And so then I can excitedly tell them, you just created some brain change. That
nice.
Your brain's relationship with your body just changed. And then they're like, what? They don't even know that's possible. They're so baffled and they're marveling at it. It's really a fun moment to have that discussion.
I bet. And it's something they can do on their own too. It's something that they literally can do on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another thing I use.
Great tips.
And there's some more I could keep.
Yeah, please go ahead. Give us a few more.
Yeah. So I do have a lot of discussion with them about the autonomic nervous system, as I mentioned earlier. And here's what can help the most. So we can only experience the safety of connection inside of us and outside of us when we're regulated, when our autonomic nervous system is regulated. That's how we function best. And so with fight or flight, which is hyper arousal, we're chasing after the connection, but it's elusive. So we try to fix, busy ourselves in avoidance, or make attempts at control. And those types of things, we're not truly connecting. We think we are. I might be busy doing some activity around the house or with someone, and I think I'm connecting, but I'm not really. I'm too busy to enjoy that connection. And then the fix comes into place because we can't sustain that energy. And it takes a lot of energy to maintain the fight or flight. So then our brain says, nope, we're out of here. And it goes into shutdown of the disconnect, of the freeze. And so once we start to realize that there's regulation where we experience connection, then there's the fight or flight where we're chasing after the connection, and then the freeze with the disconnect, then teaching that to our clients so that they can notice helps them make a decision. Do I really want to stay and disconnect? What can I do to move toward connection? Because boy, it's a lot harder to move from the disconnect and the freeze to the regulated state of the digest, where we experience the calm. And one of the interesting things that I discovered, it's out there, so everybody can discover this, but we know this, that the regulated autonomic nervous system, the rest and digest, is called the parasympathetic nervous system. The fight or flight, hyperarousal, is called sympathetic nervous system. And I like to remember it like this. If I jump out of a perfectly good airplane and I have a parachute, I'm probably going to have a softer landing. And my system may be thrilled a little bit, but I'm going to land, and it's about the landing because I have the parachute. So parasympathetic means I have that gentle.
That's a great way to describe it. Okay.
And then if we imagine jumping out of the same airplane and we don't have a parachute, we need someone's sympathy. Sympathetic.
I get it. That's good.
Yeah. And so my clients, they do chuckle at that one. And so that's a good way for them to recognize the difference. Then here's the most fascinating. To me, the freeze is really interesting. There's some information about the freeze. That is when we're disconnecting, shutting down, numbing out, avoiding, dissociating. All of those things where we're disconnecting. It's also called parasympathetic nervous system. And then we go, wait a minute, how can that be the same as the regulated state when we experience calm and connection and creativity, all those C words, compassion? We're able to connect with others. And we're looking at that going, wait, how can that be the same? But what if the freeze is our brain's best attempt to try to get us there to that calm because it knows that fight or flight is just too much energy?
Okay.
And so it pulls us into that trying to get to the calm, but it overshoots or it just misses the mark and we get stuck there. It is harder to go from hypoarousal, the freeze, to the regulated parasympathetic than it is from the hyperarousal, because we're still in motion. We're still searching for that. I know it's out there somewhere, that safety of connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that whole process is interesting. And I really do take my time talking to the clients about the autonomic nervous system.
That's great. And very important and great educating them to understand it.
Yeah. And another thing that I explore is what the perception is about chronic pain. Because we do have core beliefs about that. And something interesting happens with the brain and body connection when we have fibromyalgia. And when I worked in rheumatology, they talked about fascia a lot. And fascia was explained to me like this, that it's a netting that surrounds some of our muscles. So if I were to lie down or sit too long, the fascia is going to stiffen. Mm-hmm. And so when I go to move, what happens? My brain goes, don't move. Don't move. It's too painful. And it happens all the time. And so sometimes we listen and we stay immobile. But if we push back on that initial pain, get up and get moving, then we'll notice that our body softens a little bit. That's because the fascia is starting to break up and loosen up.
Right.
Not so rigid. So that becomes an interesting conversation about rigid and flexibility, especially with mindset. And so we want the fascia to be flexible because then our pain is less.
Right.
So then I can talk about movement instead of exercise, because exercise is hard for someone with fibromyalgia because it's inconsistent energy, it's inconsistent pain. If they're going through a flare up, then and they try to exercise, their energy is just is not there. We can't manufacture energy.
Right.
It takes a lot of energy. Emotions grab our energy more than physical. And so by that point, if they're in a flare up, that means that emotions are in the mix. I have to muscle myself. I have to force myself. I have to bootstrap myself to get through this pain. It's like encouraging ourselves to walk up a mountain. That takes emotional energy.
Right.
And that's the piece that they don't realize, that forcing themselves to move or exercise is going to take the emotional energy, and they may need something in place to help with that, to offset, to offload. And that's why I love the butterfly hug. I have them use it all the time. And so slow movements are an alternative to exercise. And so I asked them, what kind of movements have you been doing? Some of them, like a heated pool or Tai Chi or walking, mm-hmm. they can tolerate, because those are helping with the brain-body connection. Even progressive muscle relaxation, very much brain and body connection.
Mm-hmm.
I make sure I tell them that it is a way to help the brain and body to play nice in the sandbox again, right? And that as we do that, we're actually creating flexibility and within our system. And I have them do it twice, because sometimes the brain isn't paying attention when they tighten the muscle once.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can relax it. And that actually really is a good one too, if someone has fibromyalgia. But explain to them why it can be helpful. I always explain to them about the brain and body connection. This is why I want you to work on this. Yeah. And then I also have them notice what's connection doing throughout the day. So when our autonomic nervous system is regulated and it rests and digests, we will experience connection first with ourselves, then moving outward toward others, nature, our pets, just like that movie Inside Out. We're designed to check in on ourselves inside and then offer, once we've done that, offer outside of us. If we're focused outside of us and it's dictating who we are inside, our system's not going to be at rest and digest.
Yeah, too. Wow. Yeah. Great. Great. Very specific tips to do.
There is one more. I just explore for all or nothing thinking. I think we all do that, but tie it in with the autonomic nervous system, because that's a very rigid mind process, and their brain can go into all or nothing thinking very easily with chronic pain.
Got you. What advice would you give to someone who is struggling with their mental health as a result of their fibromyalgia?
Most importantly, to remember that there is hope. Gaining better understanding about the brain and body connection can help you better manage flare-ups. Seek a therapist who can help you understand how to implement boundaries around your energy, as well as boundaries with relationships. Those are very important. And scrutinize your relationships. Surround yourself with supportive people. This is tricky, because they can be well-being without understanding what it's like for you to live with inconsistent energy. And if they get upset, if you cancel on something, then that's on them.
Right.
To set your boundaries around that. And the best type of support will allow you to determine what is best for you in whatever moment you are in. And sometimes we do have those cheerleaders in our lives, which can be helpful, but they're not so helpful if they're trying to coax us beyond our energy in that moment. That's an important piece too. So being around someone who drains your energy may keep you in constant flare-ups. That does happen.
Good point for people to be aware of. Definitely. What resources are available to help people with fibromyalgia and their mental health?
So all of the regulation and coping strategies that I mentioned above are good resources. Also, there is a woman named Tammy Stackelhouse. She has a good podcast. It's called Fibromyalgia Podcast. Very easy to find. Yeah. And I started listening to her quite a few years ago. And she'll bring on guests who are leading edge in research and science with what fibromyalgia is. She has fibromyalgia herself, so she gets it. She even had an episode. This is something that folks may not think about, But she, I remember years ago, I'm sure she's had more than one, an episode on what are some techniques I can put into place before I go to the dentist.
Oh.
Because going to the dentist is probably going to throw them into a flare-up.
Right, right.
And understanding that using things like the butterfly hook, I do that. When I'm sitting in the dentist chair, I'll just tap on the sides of my thighs. You, and gotcha. Think about your body vertically. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter where you tap. You could tap on opposite sides of your body. I could tap my feet. And there's EMDR. If you look up EMDR, bilateral stimulation music, it's awesome. Mm. It's the undertones that are in one ear than the other. So it's right. about the back and forth, that bilateral.
Yeah.
Having things like that as a resource when you know that you're going to experience something, if you know there's a season in your life, if you have a lot of deaths that the anniversary is around October, prepare yourself. Right. Put some of these things into place because you are going to experience a flare-up. But what if your flare-up isn't a week long? What if it's only 2 days long because you have power-packed yourself with some self-regulation? It's really about the regulating the autonomic nervous system. And then Michigan has a fibromyalgia association that anyone can join. They have monthly online support meetings, sometimes with speakers. It's very informative. And there's a guy, Mark Grant. His website is overcomingpain.com. And I did that training with chronic pain with him. Unless you have EMDR training, you can't do that. You know, for therapists, you can't do the training with him unless you have the basic EMDR. But he does have resources. He's created some apps for folks to use. And just once again, keep in mind that as I look at this information, what do I already know about my autonomic nervous system and how can I use these tools to regulate it? It's really about that. Another thing that I take folks through is Ruth Culver is a woman who came up with this diagram called Survive, Thrive, Spiral, survive/thrive. And I use it with my clients every day. I use it for psychoeducation about the autonomic nervous system because it shows different color codes. Green is regulated autonomic nervous system. Yellow means hyperarousal. And the red means freeze, like a stop sign. And so it's a good visual and has information about the different parts of us, like our freeze protectors. And so as we look at that, and as the client, look at that with the clients, they can say, oh, I spent a lot of time in the yellow this week. And so then we can have that conversation about what that means, because that means they were chasing after connection,
right,
not quite landing on it. So her diagram has been really helpful.
Great. Wow. Great resources. Any other takeaways you'd like to share?
Sure. Okay. So I have not mentioned Brené Brown, but Brené Brown is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. You've heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
She has a good way of framing and look her information up about boundaries. I will say this. I meant to say this before with boundaries, but I'm going to say this sentence. It's not quite where I'm going, but here's one of the takeaways. Brené Brown, I was listening to her. She was being interviewed by this young guy named Travis. This was years ago. And then I can't find that original interview again, but people have grabbed that 5 minutes of what she said about this. She calls it BIG, an acronym BIG, B-I-G. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I haven't.
I have it written out on a thing in my office where I show the folks, the clients who come in, and I say, this is the perfect formula for healthy boundaries. If you get this down, you're going to be working on boundaries. We'll all go to the end of our day, still work on it, but you're going to have better relationships. Your chronic pain can go down. Here's the sentence. What boundaries, that's the B, what boundaries need to be in place, and I teach them that there's three kinds of boundaries, right? We never want the porous boundary, but we want the flexible boundary, and we only want rigid if it's willing to be temporary, right? Because otherwise we're disconnecting. So what boundaries need to be in place for me to stay in my integrity? I is the I, the B-I-G is part of it. So if I'm staying, if I'm walking on eggshells, I'm not staying in my integrity because I'm not respecting my own needs. If I am launching attacks over the boundary, or if I'm allowing others to launch attack, I'm not staying in my integrity. So I teach them about integrity. And then in order for me to, what boundaries need to be in place in order for me to stay in my integrity and make the most generous assumption about you. And that to me is the most interesting part of it. because a generous assumption means that however somebody else is functioning on their side of the boundary is how they're functioning. And however I'm functioning is how I'm the differentiation of self, so that the blending of the emotions, the boundaries, the caregiving doesn't happen, right? When we see clearly where we end and they begin. And to be generous means that I can recognize this is how they're functioning, but I could say no thank you to the meeting today. And I can find an exit, or I can just, and I could say, it looks like you're struggling today. I'm not going to engage with it. I'm not going to interact with it, no matter if they're enticing me or launching aggressive attacks. And so it's a really
great.
Yeah. So big, B-I-G. The other thing that I want to mention about Brené, and this is very quick, but she has a good way of framing compassion that helped me in my past. And it's now helping my clients when I share it with them. And it goes something like this. Compassion isn't true compassion if it's all directed. Oops, I lost my thing. If it's all directed at others and not at me. And so once we start to realize that, and they get it, my clients will get it, and they go, oh, wait, I guess I'm not truly compassionate because I've been neglecting my own needs.
Right.
But teach them about, instead of self-care, I set that aside, and I started teaching them about self-kindness and self-compassion. And what are you noticing about protecting your energy around that? Mm-hmm. And so I want to read to you something that last Christmas, because I was in the medical offices and I do woodworking, I made everybody a wooden coaster. One of the doctors had given me a bunch of oak floorboards and I cut them all up. And I engraved on the coasters this message, keeping that idea about Brené's idea about compassion in mind, because I was working with a bunch of healthcare providers, right? And so this is what I said. And each month I would bring mental health awareness to the office. And this is something I gave them for that. So I said this: working hard and pushing through a situation may get the job done, but overlooking self-compassion in the process will disrupt the balance between care of others and care of yourself. Love yourself kindly, and you can authentically love and care for others. On those days when you struggle the most, remember that you are worth your own kindest act.
That's a great quote. Wow. Definitely something to live by. Karen, thank you. Thank you for sharing all the resources, your knowledge. I think you're going to help so many of our listeners navigate their own mental health related to their fibromyalgia much differently. So thank you again.
Wow. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
I'd also like to thank the team behind the podcast, Jason Claden, Juliana Whitten, and Chris Kelman, with a special thank you to Jason Claden, who edits our episodes. Thank you for everyone listening to Conversations from the Couch. Take care.